Welcome, everyone. I call the Conference Committee of the Ag and Vets bill together. First, we'll do some introductions, at least to the people that are at the table now. And, you know, Senator Vickerman and I like to try and start on time. I apologize to people. It's 10 minutes late already. And I know where it's hard to get going in some mornings and people are busy with other meetings, but we think it's important to get going. Clearly, if we were taking motions or other things, we'd wait till we had a quorum on both sides, which is three members on each side of the conference committee. So with that, at least at the table here, let's introduce who's sitting here and what your jobs are. We're going to start right down here with my good friend from the other side, staff member.
Mike Scholl, and I'm with Republican House Research.
David Moosevich, House CFL Research.
Jim Cleary, House Research.
Jim Reinholtz, House Fiscal Analysis.
Colby Sullivan, Nonpartisan House Research.
Ron Szymanski, Representative, District 18A.
Kent Deacon, Representative, District 2A.
Representative Tim Spouse, District 8B, which is more in Pine City area.
Representative Mary Ellen Ochamba, 11B.
Warren Wheeler, Committee Legislative Assistant.
A.J. Dewar, State Administrator.
Representative Al Junkie from Candioi County.
Senator Jim Vickerman, Southwestern Minnesota.
Tim Michaels, Committee Administrator.
State Senator Dan Scogan, District 10.
Greg Knapp, Senate Analyst.
And Mr. Chair, we're missing two when they come up.
When anyone else joins the table, we'll introduce them, Senator.
Thank you.
So on behalf of Senator Vickerman, I know a couple of things. First of all, shut off your cell phones or silence them. We have a rule in the House, at least when I have the gavel and we're sitting here, we'll enforce it, that if your cell phone goes off, you owe us a buck for the coffee fund, and if you answer the cell phone, it's $5, all right? So that's our rules we'll try and enforce here, and we've had to do that a few times.
I left mine in my office.
Smart move.
Representative, just in case.
Yeah, I have had people prepay, by the way, so, and that's okay. The other thing is, this is the House Ag Committee and Veterans Committee, and we always have a pot of coffee on over here, Senator. So for members at the table or people in the audience that still need your morning cup, that's yours. Help yourself to it. Just a couple of comments, and I'll certainly let Senator Vickerman comment, too. Today, what we plan to do is we'll have staff walk us through the side-by-sides and certainly ask questions along the way, minimal questions if we can, but we need to get an idea what's in the two bills. I also will point out for future meetings that under our new joint House and Senate rules, the gavel changes hands every day, not counting Sundays. So whether we call a meeting or not, there'll be no stonewalling with gavels as has happened in the past, not with our committee, but with others. So tomorrow, Senator Vickerman has a gavel, I have it Friday, Senator Vickerman Saturday, me Monday, et cetera, et cetera. So, whether we choose to call a meeting or not, certainly that's up to the chair with the gavel, but we'll be working closely together on those meetings, and we haven't decided on future meetings yet, but certainly keep an eye on the website in both bodies and make sure that you're watching that. If we don't know now, we'll make that decision as we go forward. A housekeeping matter from Senator Vickerman's LA, members. Put your papers back in the folders when you're done. Otherwise, you may not end up with your same stuff the next time, and you've got notes and other things. So any of the stuff you want, tuck it back in the folders, and it'll make it a lot easier on our staff because they'll basically then throw away stuff that's laying on the table. So if you would do that. We had two members join us. You always get identified when we start, and you come in after the start time, which is fine, but please introduce yourself. And where you're from and or what you do.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm Senator Lisa Phobie, and I represent District 16, which is all of Mille Lacs County, some of Sherburn, some of Benton, and some of Morrison, and lots of great veterans and ag people. Thank
Welcome.
You.
Welcome. And the staffer.
Mr. Chairman, Dan Mueller, I'm the fiscal analyst for the Senate.
Thank you. Members, I have something else kind of unique to talk about now. Yesterday, as you know, the governor met with Speaker Kelleher and Majority Leader Pogemiller. What they decided in that meeting, and again, I think this is extremely unique, is they've basically set out a couple, let's call them tiers of bills. Our bill, along with about four others, are in what we'll call the Tier 1 area of bills. And Tier 1 means, what that means is, number one, they'd like us to get our work done by about a week from now, if we can. And hopefully get these bills maybe off the floor of both bodies by the end of next week, which would be nice. I'd rather do that than be sitting here May 18th or August 18th. And I think everyone in the audience and everyone at this table agrees with that. The other thing that I think is even more unique is I said, well, we can get that done, Madam Speaker, if we get a target from you people in short order. Because certainly I think we agree on a lot of the policy items in here we'll see today and a lot of the other things, but certainly money becomes the issue. Well, the answer to that was Senator Vickerman, Representative Junkie, Department of Ag, Department of Veterans Affairs, AURI, Board of Animal Health, and on, the accounts have gotten here, Military Affairs. See if you can set your own target and bring it back to us. Now, what does that mean? I think we'd all say, well, we can set our own target. Just, you know, give me another $15 million positive target. We're out of here tomorrow, right, in a quick hurry. But frankly, from both the governor's side as well as both bodies here in the legislature, we have to be realistic. And, you know, the House and Senate, you know, are cutting $15, $16, $18 million in our accounts here. And it's been difficult, but I think we all know we have to participate in this budget solution. And I think veterans believe that they can participate as well as the ag folks. And, you know, it's not the time to dig in heels right now. And, you know, the governor actually increased money in this division, across the divisions. And so if you start thinking early on, and that's what I'm asking everyone to do after this meeting and going through the side-by-sides, start thinking about where you can participate realistically. And that no longer means just defending your position to the nth degree, both at this table and, frankly, to the department. And it also means to departments and others, when we do call meetings and do these public negotiations, we want people in the room that can make decisions. Because this isn't necessarily going to be done behind closed doors. So if that's a commissioner, we want a commissioner here. Or a deputy commissioner. If it's a legislative liaison, which I see sitting here, Christine and Quinn and others, if you have the ability to make those decisions, then that's great. But really get that straightened out in your departments before you come back to the next meeting. Because we're going to be moving here and trying to get things done on the fly to get done by next week. And we need people sitting here that can make decisions, not to say, well, we're going to break for a couple hours and go make some phone calls. And because we've really been given the charge to come back. Now, I will tell you, too, that leadership said, yeah, if you come back with a positive number or even a zero, that'll probably be rejected by all three parties. Because they know they can't do that. But again, if we find some middle ground, and then what is that? You know, is it $6 million? Is it $10 million cuts? Is it, I don't know where it is, but I think if we're realistic, we're going to have a real opportunity here to do something different in the legislature and to come up with our own realistic targets to participate again in that budget fix and to move ahead. So I want people to think about that as we go through the side-by-sides. We've got caucus at 10 and we're both in at 11, so we don't want to spend more than an hour or so here this morning walking through this. But again, to the groups that are in the audience too, whether it's ethanol or AURI or the veterans groups or others, start thinking about not what you want if we had unlimited money, but what you can get by with. Where can, what projects can we put off for 2 years that we'd really like to do right now? Honestly, we'd love to do them, but what can we put off? Let's think about core services and not cutting them. Let's make sure we take care of our patients at the veterans' homes. But not, let's not look at blue sky stuff this year. Let's try and preserve jobs. I think that's important. I think we all agree with that, no matter what party you're at right now. The most, I think, precious thing we can do on this committee is make sure, I don't care, frankly, if you're a deputy commissioner or in the commissioner's office, or if you're an AFSCME or MAPE worker down on the trenches, or you're out on the field inspecting dairy barns, or working at our veterans' homes, losing your job right now is the worst thing that can happen to anyone and any family. And so if we're always focused on, I think, and Senator Bickman, I'll let you speak in a minute, focus on where we can make these reductions without affecting jobs, I think that's a good message that this committee can take back to the both bodies and hopefully pass bills off the floor with that as our key priority, along with then not cutting services to our veterans or essential services in agriculture, like our lab work now. You know, they're busy testing food right now, and people and other things for swine flu. We have the peanut butter thing we took care of. We're not going to cut anything that's essential to the state, but let's try not to cut jobs, too. So with that, Senator Bickman, you got anything you'd like to add to the folks here in the room?
First thing I'd like to say, we're not going to forget veterans. We never have. Representative Junkie, they're number one on our list. We'll also help with agriculture. And I think we can get done probably quicker than a lot of those major bills that are coming. I would like to do it if we can get our bill together and get it passed before it gets mean and ugly when you really start going into some of those, I won't mention what bills they are, but some of those that you can't, it's been a very difficult time to get done. You're right, we are a little bit different, but I'm pretty sure we can get pretty close together. In fact, I thought about, before we did this, maybe we could, between the two of us, do it very quickly. But we want to keep an open process here so everybody has their say in it. But just remember, you that are, I don't farm now, my son does. I have ag industries in my mind. And veterans, also, we work very hard at. And so I think we can compromise very quickly, Representative Junkie. Now, before I go on any further, we have another member of my committee that's coming. Take your name.
Please introduce yourself and where you represent.
Thank you. I'm Sharon Erickson-Ropes. I represent southeastern Minnesota. I live in Winona. Represent three counties on the tip of the southeastern part of the state.
Good. Okay. Well, I haven't talked to staff before this morning on both sides. I assume they can wrestle now and decide who's going to go through the side-by-sides. We want to talk both. I think it's important maybe to talk about the fiscal sheets first so we can start thinking about where we're different in numbers from both the governor and the two bodies. And then someone walk through the policy items in both bills for ag and vet. So, Mr. Reinholtz, are you...
Mr. Chairman, I'm prepared to go through the money side by side for the conference committee. You should have a handout titled General Fund Summary by Agency.
Okay, yeah, that's just a smaller one.
Small spreadsheet of numbers. This spreadsheet, we've condensed it to just basically show the changes and then the agency totals, so it's a little easier to understand, so it won't take too long for me to go through. I'll just review the important parts on the front page. It's a comparison of the projected forecast, Governor Rex, House, Senate, for the agencies. This is only the general fund expenditures within the two positions. Important item to note would be on the last column, the difference between the House and the Senate for the total of the expenditure is $3,579,000. The Senate is that higher than the House. One other item on the revenue line is $978,000 worth of new revenue is raised in the Senate position in the veterans' home area. They have a And the net effect then is slightly, it makes that down to about $2.5 million. So both positions in general fund are very close in this bill. Then I go through the second page and I'll go through the changes and point out, I believe it's probably most important to the committee to point out where there are differences between the House and the Senate. That would be the column that's labeled AL and says fiscal year 10 and 11, House minus Senate. And it shows the differences in positions then. And this begins with the Department of Agriculture.
Excuse me, Ms. Reynolds. And to members, as you're going through, if you've got a quick question, certainly ask it now. I think it's easier as he's going through to stop and clarify something right there rather than trying to come back later when we're on it. So just throw that out there, too. Speak up, and we'll get your question answered.
Mr. Chairman, members, and to continue, this begins with the Department of Ag and the Protection Services Program. The first change item is on line 19. It is the plant pest survey appropriations. The House recommendation was to reduce that by $50,000 in each year. So there's a difference there of $100,000 over the biennium. The Senate position is to keep it at the current level. Line 20 is the wolf and elk damage compensation. That was the governor's initiative, increasing by $25,000 the money for the wolf and the elk. That is the same position on both sides that have adopted the dollars of the governor. Line 21 is the Senate-only position on funding the noxious weed law at $50,000, one time only. The House does not have that position. Those are the general fund items. And on line 24 begins some of the agricultural fund item differences. Both sides have the ACRA program increase on line 24 that was recommended by the governor, same position. Line 25 is a pesticide dealer license increase. It was recommended by the governor. The House has that position. The Senate does not have that position.
So again, members, when you see the brackets around it, that's a Senate higher number position. When you see no brackets around a number, it's a House higher position in money, just to clarify as you're going, if you want to mark that on there.
Mr. Chairman, next item on line 26 is the dairy food inspection increased appropriation recommended by the governor. Both sides have that same position in their bills too. Line 27 is a major difference. The governor had a recommendation for pesticide program funding increases. That's $4,340,000. The House does have that position. The Senate does not. That has a corresponding increase in the fees and the revenue later on, and the House does have that. The Senate does not. Moving into the marketing and development program line.
Excuse me a minute. We had one member join us. Could you introduce yourself and tell us where you've been? I mean, tell us tell us where you're from.
Steve Dill, state senator from Dassel. And where have I been?
Where are you?
I've been beating the rain here.
Thank you, Senator. Welcome. All right, Mr. Reinhold.
Mr. Chairman and members, moving back to the marketing development program area in the Ag Department, line 62 is the sustainable Ag grants. The House has a reduction of $60,000 in each year. The Senate has a reduction of $100,000, so there's a difference of $80,000 in the two positions. Line 63, the governor recommended elimination of the biocontrol activity. Both sides have that at the same level in the bill now. Line 64 is the urban pest management program funding. Both sides have the same position as recommended by the governor. Line 65 is the integrated pest management. The governor recommended a reduction of 345. The House has a reduction of 200. The Senate has the governor, so it's a difference of 154 between the two. Line 66 is the organic cost share appropriation. The House reduced that by $90,000 in each year. The Senate did not. Line 67 is the agriculture promotion appropriations. Both sides reduced that as the recommended amount that the governor had in his budget. Line 68, both sides are the same. There's the ag in the classroom reduction recommended by the governor. Line 69 is a Senate-only proposal for $25,000, which is the St. Paul Farmers Market Growers Association grant. The House did hear that proposal. The House amended it to include the entire state, so the language is a little different, and the House has it in a different spot of the bill. The House has it down in the administration and finance administration area on line 118. But slightly different language, same dollars amount. Back up to line 70, the marketing and development program again. The Senate has a $906,000 biennial reduction that the House does not have in the general fund appropriation to that division over at the Ag Department. Moving into the value-added ag program, the difference, the change item is on line 96. This is the ethanol producer payment. Both sides have reductions. The house reduction is $3.752 million larger in the biennium. In the administration financial assistance program portion of the agriculture agency, there are, the first change item is on line 117. The House has $1 million for the Ag 21 program. The language in the House bill, the writer would clearly call it, puts the emphasis on the livestock area of that.
Those are livestock investment grants members.
Mr. Chairman, the Senate does not have funding, increased funding for that area. On line 118, this is the item I said the House has $25,000 for farmers market fee reimbursement. The language is slightly different. It increases, it extends it throughout the state. 119 is a $60,000 one-time only position in the House, which is for a program called the Farm to Home Grant. There's some language in the bill that sets up a pilot project on that in the House language. Senate does not have appropriations for that. The next item would be on the line 121, the Minnesota Turf Seed Council. The House and the Senate both have a $50,000 increase for this activity. Line 122, the Dairy Development Program. Both programs, both House and Senate positions are a reduction in the program, not as large as the governor recommended. There's a $100,000 larger reduction in the Senate position for the biennium than in the House position. Line 123 is a House position only. There's a governor's staff salary elimination. The House has language which prohibits the departments from paying for governor's staff persons. This reflects the savings that would happen in the Department of Agriculture. The Senate does not have.
And members, you'll see that in the Veterans Affairs and other budgets. Representative Kahn, who is Representative Betzel's counterpart in the House, basically has negotiated the governor's office, said to do your staffing of your staff, we should do it over here in government operations like everyone else does, and you come and tell us how many folks you need, and we'll do it. Consequently, what we've seen in the past is money here. I think there's 33,000 in Veterans Affairs that we're going to pay for governor's staff. And so we're able now then to utilize these funds within our budgets and not take them away and give them to governor's staff. And I do believe the governor's agreed to do those negotiations and his chief of staff with Representative Kahn. Just a little background on that House position.
Mr. Chairman, moving back to the next change item, that would be on line 124 of the spreadsheet. That's an administrative reduction in that division over at the Minnesota Department of Agriculture. Both sides have reductions. The House position is a reduction $630,000 greater than the Senate recommendation. Line 125 is a Senate-only position, a one-time-only appropriation of $30,000 for the Star Farms report. Line 126 is the Feeding Minnesota Task Force report. That is a Senate-only position, $25,000 appropriation, one-time only in 2010. Yeah. Line 127 is also a Senate-only position. That is an appropriation for the Veterans Diagnostic Lab of $1 million, one-time only.
And members, I'll make a comment on that. Again, I think it's appropriate to comment, and anyone else is welcome to, too. I can tell you what happened to that in the House, because it's a very important provision. We had it in our division. I looked at it. I was the chief author, and I said, you know, this really isn't an ag thing. This is over at the University of Minnesota. So I sent it over to Representative Rukavina's committee. And Representative Rukavina agreed to fund it in the higher ed committee. And as soon as he came out with his inkle that he was going to fund it, we got a letter from the head of the School of Veterinary Medicine over at the U and said, we'll take care of it internally. You people do not need to fund it over in the legislature. So I've got that letter. I can provide it to people, but we are covered on that amount. So I want to make that clear. And I've got the letter, Senator Vickerman, from the school that said they will take care of it. And frankly, it's something they should have done anywhere. I mean, they've got a $3 billion budget over at the University of Minnesota, and that they can't cover certification on a lab, I think, was that's what piqued my interest at the time, too, Senator Vickerman.
Well, Mr. Chair, we toured that facility out there, We just have to be sure that that keeps operating.
Yep. And I will provide the letter, Senator Ropes.
But Senator Dale has been kind of the lead person on that, so you have to convince him.
Don't worry. Senator Ropes.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'd also like a copy of the letter. I'm on the higher ed conference committee, and we are also dealing with the veterinarian's loan forgiveness, so I'd like that in my bundle.
And I can tell you the loan forgiveness is in Representative Rukavina's bill, too, so that should be easy to agree to if you're working on that over there, too. But I will get you a copy of that letter because I was pleased to see they covered it. It's going to be certified. We're going to have a certified lab, which was the problem over there. Senator Dill. You have something? You look like...
Well, I hadn't heard about this letter, so I'd like to see it.
I'll make sure we get a copy. Our staff will make sure that all members of the Senate get a copy before the end of the day. All right.
Mr. Chairman, members, there is one additional change item. It is in the Agriculture Fund. That's on line 129 of the spreadsheet. That's titled Fertilizer Grant, Council Grants. That is an $800,000 in each year house-only position that would award a grant to the Minnesota Ag Fertilizer Research Education Council for they would do funded projects related to the productivity and effective use of fertilizers. That is also has a revenue component that does raise revenue. It's in the agricultural fund. That'd be the end of the changes in the Department of Agriculture, Mr. Chair. I could move on to page 3 for the smaller agencies within this conference committee. The Animal Health Board is the first agency on the this page of the spreadsheet. Both House and Senate have reductions in the general fund appropriation on line 182. The House has 924. Senate has a reduction of 758, so there's a slight difference there. On 183, both House and Senate fund the bovine TV buyout with additional dollars as recommended by the department.
Mr. Reinhold, can you explain why in the out years, and again, we're concerned about targets in here, too, On the reduction on 182, you see a smaller reduction in the out years. How does that occur? I thought once we reduce base elements, unless there's some one-time reductions the first year from the TB or something, do you know why the out years would be a smaller or fiscal staff on the Senate side either way?
Mr. Chairman, that's on the House side. That's there. There should be language. There is language, I believe, in the rider on that reduction that sets the base for the 2012 year, and I believe it was the original reduction in 10 and 11 for this agency in the House position, and there were some last minute changes, and it was determined that there were available dollars in the out years within the target, and the decision was made to leave those, kind of jump that target back up is really what it did.
All right.
You are correct, though. No, without any language in the bill, that reduction would have tailed out normally at the same level. The other item in the next item on this page is the AURI Institute. That's that both sides have a reduction. As you can see, there's a $36,000 difference. How slightly larger in the reduction than the Senate is. Both are significantly less in the reduction than the governor recommended. The other item on this page is down on line 219. This is a RFA authority. Both bills have increased bonding authority for RFA bonds, $35 million. Slightly different language, but both have the same.
And again, just a reminder on that to members, this is important. We need to get it done here. If we can, and it does not take 81 votes or 40 whatever in the Senate to pass that because it's user funded bonds, and so it's not under the GO bond stipulation, and we've had have that word come down to us from our fiscal folks.
Mr. Chairman, members, then if you move on to page 4, this would be the vets and military related agencies. The first change item would be on line 266. This was a request from the governor for IT increased costs in vet services. The House funded a portion of that, $500,000 in each year. The Senate does not have funding for that, so there's a difference. 267 is a state soldiers assistance increase. The House has a $100,000 increase over the biennium. The Senate does not. On 269, the GI Bill, there's significant dollar reductions indicated on this in both sides, Mr. Chairman. Just to refresh memories, this program is funded at a base of $6 million in each year. In recent time, in fact, the projections for 09 are to spend less, approximately $1 million. So both sides are reducing that money that, if not spent, would otherwise cancel. The House position, the Senate position actually reduces the base by 2.7 more. The Senate also changes the appropriation to be an open appropriation versus the direct appropriation, and it does have a cap on it, so there will be some language differences.
Can fiscal staff explain the open appropriation process, what that means, maybe the Senate staff?
Mr. Mueller. Mr. Chairman, we put the... We requested a fiscal note on what the actual costs were of the programs, and then we changed the language in the bill, and we'll see that when we go through the side-by-side, that the Commissioner of Finance pays the actual cost of what the reimbursements are. So every forecast will get an updated number of what the actual cost of that program is, and then it will show up on the tracking and the fund balance and everything as an open appropriation. So each forecast, we won't have to figure out how much we can cut from the program or what's available or try to guess how much is needed.
And those dollars then can be used across our budgets with that open appropriation. I assume that's what you did here. Yeah.
Right.
And what does it do? What does an open appropriation language do to future bases? Does that cancel the base and reduce it, or does the $6 million remain in base then going forward?
Mr. Chairman, in the future, the base will reflect what the forecasted amount is for that program. So the $6 million that was originally forecasted for that program is no longer there. It will be the actual amount of what the payments for the program will be in each base. So every time there's a new forecast, there will be a new base for the program.
And again, the members, this was similar. If you remember, we did a supplemental budget last year, and this next biennium, I think we're extremely fortunate to have these dollars to utilize that otherwise would have fallen to the bottom line, or we would have really been making some excruciating cuts around. So I think everyone acquiesces that, and I know talking to the departments too and the governor's office, I think they're on board with what we're doing here too, because we can actually spread that now across Veterans Affairs and other programs to keep them whole or actually increase their spending. So that's an interesting concept. I appreciate the Senate explanation on that. We have one more staffer that joined us. Please introduce yourself and what you do.
My name is Tom Botter, and I'm the counsel for the Ag and Vets Committee.
Thanks,
Senate
Tom.
Ag and Vets Committee.
All right, Mr. Reinhold. Mr. Chairman, moving back to the spreadsheet, the next item would be on line 270. That's a Vet Services Administration reduction, $353,000 in each year. It's the House recommendation. The Senate does not have a recommendation on that item. 271 is the grant increase to the Minnesota Veterans Assistance Council. Both sides have an increase. The House is $460,000 larger in the increase than the Senate is. Another difference, the Senate has it tailed. The House has it one time only. Moving into the Veterans Homes Program area.
By the way, up top, you missed the line, but you see the governor's staff salary elimination there, too, of $33,000 a year. I inkled that earlier, and that's where you see it show up as money available to Veterans Affairs on the House side.
Mr. Chairman, excuse me for missing that.
They're really little numbers. It's hard to see them all. To staff in the future, if we can make these sheets just to, you know, not for Vickerman, but I'm getting old and I'm having a hard time focusing on these numbers. If we could.
You're getting old. Yeah. I'm more than getting old.
I know. If you could just make them a little bit bigger, you know, I know our copy machines can do that now. It would be helpful. So I think everyone's kind of agreeing internally on that anyway. All right, Mr. Reinhold.
Mr. Chairman, in the Veterans Homes Division in the Veterans Affairs Department, there are significant differences. Line 298 is the maintaining current services line item that was recommended by the governor. The Senate has that at that level. The house does not. The house, though, has individual pieces that came out of that. Line 299 would be one of those. It's titled Fuel and Utility Costs. That has an $870,000 increase that is in the in the house recommendation. On 298, the house has a $600,600. Now, that is actually earmarked in the rider language to be used for medicine and food versus the language in the Senate version, which just puts it in as an increase. The next item on line 300 is the governor requested money for the Veterans Home Repair and Betterment Program. The House funded that partially. The Senate does not fund that. Line 301 is the Hastings Mental Health Program. The governor recommended that at $440,000 a year. The House has that. The Senate does not. Line 302 is a reduction in admin to the Vets Home Administration budget. That is a House-only position, $500,000 in each year. Line 303 is the rider language that reduces, in the Senate only, is a reduction in their base for overuse of overtime. If you recall in the legislative auditor's report, there was a citing that overtime was overutilized. I think that is a Senate position trying to recapture some of that from the base. Line 304 and 305 are Senate-only positions. What they are, Mr. Chairman, and the House did consider this in some language. There's language in the Senate bills, actually I think the Health and Human Services bill, that would encourage the Veterans Home to utilize Medicare Part D funding and also become certified for Medicare payments at the homes. This is providing the dollars that they would need to hire some billing specialists and also some additional staff at the homes in order to become certified. What that also then does is raise that revenue that I mentioned on the first page, and what that would be reimbursements from Medicare coming into the general fund. Mr. Chairman, moving on, that's the end of the Veterans Home Program. Moving into the Department of Military Affairs, that's line 351 is the first change item. The Senate only positioned $20,000 morale support for deployed members. Line 365 is the next change item. That's in the Enlistment Incentives Division at the department. The governor had a recommendation of $3 million, $115 each year. The House has that as a one-time only at $3 million. The Senate has that as a one-time only at $1.5 million. Mr. Chairman, the last page is really just summaries. Yes, that's probably we covered what was important to the committee, unless you have any questions.
Any questions, members, on the spreadsheet at this time? Senator Bickerman.
Mr. Chair, there's some differences in the fund amount because we had a different target than than you had. So we're still very veteran-friendly, but we had hopefully that target's going to change, and then our numbers will change.
I think your target was it a 7% cut, and ours was a 6%. So that's why you're seeing some of the differences show up on bottom line and then out into the tails targets, too. So you're right. We're close, but you had a little tougher job than us in the Senate, and we appreciate that. Any other discussion or questions on spreadsheets? And again, members, on a lot of these, obviously, we'll get in some testimony when we need to, and when we see the differences, maybe have departments, others come up and explain, and we do have some sorting to do. I will also acquiesce at this point that there's no decision that's been made on the Veterans Homes portion. As you know, Senator Berglund carries that portion in her bill, and to me, that's still curious. It's very difficult to divide departments like that. It's all in the Department of Veterans Affairs, and they share services. So I mean, they share the fiscal folks over there. They share their legislative liaison. I'm sure there's commissioners that are shared. And so when you split that, if it simply lands over, frankly, in the Human Services Division, we're struggling with how we would move money over there, because Senator Berglund then would have to reimburse us back out of her fund
for those shared costs and other things, and I think it's extremely difficult to do. So what my intent is at this point, I've talked to our leadership, we will continue to put those budgets together here in our division, and maybe at the end of the day, next week sometime, I'm going to go have to, or Mr. Berglund's going to have to come over, and we're going to have to knock on each other's doors and sit down and talk about it and see if we can't resolve that. But it'd be like us going over to some committee and saying, give me that piece of your budget over, and I don't know how you handle that. So, and it's one of those things that Mr. Chair and others, as you know, the Veterans Home Board was dissolved by executive order about a year and a half ago, and that account then moved over where I believe it properly belongs is with the Department of Veterans Affairs, but the Senate hasn't made that transition yet, and but we're hopeful that we can negotiate that, but we will continue to. I don't know if any of you sit on so Senator Ropes, you're kind of familiar with it, which I think is good. As we negotiate here, your input will be very important on that because I think it's important for us to continue those discussions with the department on those budgets. So, anything else on the spreadsheets? All right.
Well, Representative Kunke, what makes it complicated, that's out of our jurisdiction.
Yeah. Well, and
I have to live within my
rules. And it's the same way, for you, and the same with us. We pulled for whatever reason. Military Affairs sits in Representative Towns' committee. So the numbers you see there were not negotiated or set up by the folks that are sitting at the table here, unless any of you on Towns' committee? No. So, I think it's a fairly simple negotiation with Military Affairs, but you do see the differences, particularly with the re-enlistment dollars, and that discussion we can have here, and ultimately you and I and Senator Kahn probably need to sit down and make sure that she's okay with whatever we do, because it really does fall under her jurisdiction, and we don't want to step on toes as little as possible. So, yeah, Senator Rose.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I have a process question here. I had contacted your offices before, and also Representative Kahn, about a bill that she's carrying in her omnibus bill. This is the preference for disabled veterans businesses. And I had asked if it could travel also in your veterans bill, or your omnibus bill here, so it might travel in both places, and then we could pick it up through this committee because it is, we don't have a Senate partner. And right now it's traveling alone through Senator Kahn's committee, or Senator Representative Kahn's committee, and Senator Betzold's committee, I believe. So how are we going to sync up that singular bill? Because I think that's real important for every one of us in the room here. And it's traveled on the House side, and I was not able to, or it's not in your bill? Is that the way I understand it?
Senator Ropes, maybe, yeah, good question and a good process question. Let me explain what we did in the House, first of all. We have a subcommittee on veterans that represents Conan. It's a subcommittee of Representative Tremba's Ag Policy Group. And so they hear bills, pass them to Representative Tremba's committee. And then from there, a couple things happen. Clearly, if they have a fiscal implication, they get routed to the division that handles that. In your case, it went to Representative Kahn's committee because it was basically a State Department hiring and preferences, and so it fell under her government ops jurisdiction, and we don't have jurisdiction over that. Now, when we put our bill together, what we did was Representative Tremba either sent it to a fiscal committee or sent it to the General Register in the House, depending on the type of bill. When we put this together as an omnibus bill, we looked at the General Register, and all those veterans bills or ag bills that were policy were pulled back and put in this bill, which we always want to get an omnibus bill traveling. It's a little easier than pulling them all up individually and getting them through both bodies and maybe even conferring them later. And so we put them all in here, as well as the fiscal bills. Now, I have no problem adding bills that have passed both bodies and or are sitting in other conference committees, and again, both for you and Senator Vickerman, as well as us and our folks, will have to talk to those other chairs. But if Representative Kahn doesn't have any problem with it, we're happy, I think, to add it to this bill, and I think that's appropriate. Senator Vickerman, I don't know that you have a problem with that. A lot of other chairs and everyone agree, so we can certainly do that. I just don't want to step on toes, and I don't suspect we would there, but
Senator Rose. Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I have talked to Representative Newton, who's the author of the bill over there, and Representative Kahn, and they're all in agreement.
Thanks.
So if you'd be willing to carry it on the House side of our work here, I think it would come before this committee then.
And what I'd ask you and other members to do, if there are instances like that, if there's language changes or bills to add, get that drafted up with your staff. So whether it's Friday or Monday or Tuesday or Wednesday, when we're putting bills together, amendments will be available to us, and we can quickly adopt them, I'm pretty sure, if there's agreement on all sides. But I'm going to leave it up to members and along with our staff to make sure you get those amendments and have them in your precious folder as we move ahead. So I have no problem with that. And frankly, other language in here, too, that might need a revamp as you look at it and hear and say, well, it's close, but it should be tweaked, or the departments are telling us there's better language. Certainly let's staff get those things drafted up, and things can move a lot quicker then, rather than talking about and having to wait another day for those amendments. Certainly do them before we even talk to them in anticipation if you think it's going to be something that will go fairly smoothly. So any other questions on process or... All right, can we move into the policy stuff? Who's doing that, Mr. Knopf or Mr.?
Mr. Chairman, I think if Mr. Sullivan wants to go through, and if you don't mind if I just pipe in once in a while.
I've never known you to be shy, Mr. Knopf. So, Mr. Sullivan.
Mr. Chair and Conference Committee members, I'll move through quickly through the rioter section and then spend a little more time on the policy provisions in the agriculture articles. And also note that staff are working on a document that will clarify which provisions are the same, similar, or different, and highlight the differences between the two positions in more detail, and we'll have that ready for the next meeting. So I'll be kind of brief today.
Good. So for members who haven't been on conference committee before, this is very helpful, because when we actually start making motions and adopting language, to see that spreadsheet, same, similar, or different, obviously the difference take a little more time, but the same and similar we usually move pretty quick on, and motions will be rapid, and but it'll help you get familiar with it before we get to that point. So we'll make sure you get that document as soon as as soon as research staff has it done.
And Mr. Chair, I'm looking at the side-by-side document beginning on page R1.
That's the big document now, members and audience, the side-by-sides we're on.
You'll see all the appropriations that Mr. Reinhold just went through in detail on R1, R2, R3. Continuing R4 and R5, you'll see some house-only language that deals with reductions to integrated pest management and similar activities that the governor and Senate would eliminate. Moving on,
Chairman, I just want to point out on the bottom of R3, you have a rider in for plant pest surveys. If you notice when Mr. Reynolds went through the spreadsheet, the Senate didn't cut plant pest surveys. This is actually a reduction in their base, what you're showing in your rider here. I mean, it's showing appropriate money, but the Senate, there has not been a rider for this in the past, but the Senate just fully funded it, so there's no rider. So even though it shows language on 3.21 on the House side, it shows language on the rider, the Senate still fully funds plant pest surveys.
So they're fully funded in the Senate.
And this
we're
actually represents
we're changing the base into the
future. Yeah, so if you look at the numbers in the spreadsheet, I just wanted to point that out.
I appreciate that. Mr. Sullivan.
Mr. Chair, pages R4 and R5 are very similar except for the appropriation amounts. On page R6, line 7.2, beginning on line 7.2 on the House side and 5.22 on the Senate side are the farmers market language, the differences there that Mr. Reinhold discussed.
Mr. Chairman, can I just make one?
Mr.
Go back to R5. There's a difference I want to make sure people know about. On 5.9 on the Senate side, the Senate continues the $15,000 each year for organic market and program and, development. I don't see similar language on the House side.
Mr. Chair and members,
Mr. Sullivan,
line 5.22 is the same language. The House appropriates only $10,000 in each year. I'm assuming that federal dollars will be available for the same purpose, so the language is a little different, but the commissioner is authorized in the House language to allocate any excess amount for organic market and program development.
Right, so we have 10, you have 15, and let me just briefly explain to the senators, when we took testimony, we looked on the very back part of the governor's budget books, you saw federal monies, and Colin Peterson put, I think the state's going to get $388,000 a year
out of the federal farm bill for the next 5 years, and that money can be used for organic cost share. And so that was a place that was testified, and I know a number of the farm groups that are concerned with this came up and said that there's adequate dollars, in fact, excess dollars coming in than what we used to do from the federal side. So for at least the next 5 years, as long as that farm bill remains intact, that money will be available, and that realized the savings for us under that same program. We didn't want to double up because, again, unless you wanted to push that money, then you have $100,000 a year. That would then push down to the sustainable grants and some other things within that program, and that's fair to talk about. But I just wanted to point out the organic, why the organic differences in the two bills, because I don't want people to faint and think that we're not supporting organics, because we are, and it's Minnesota is one of the biggest organic growing states in the nation now, and I think because of some of the things we've done in the past, that's why. But I want to make comment just to the senators on that, and we can take further testimony on that, obviously, into the future. Mr. Sullivan.
Mr. Chair and members, and I'll pick up on R6 with the ethanol appropriation to see the difference in the two amounts between House and Senate. And then on page R7, there are a couple of House-only...
Mr. Chairman, excuse me.
Mr. Knopf.
I just want to point out on the Hale, the difference on the Hale language. Mr. Reinholz mentioned, and I think we need to make sure we know what the differences are. On 7.20 on the House side, you've got a broad one for the hailstorm in 2008. I'm not sure which hailstorm, but the Senate is specifically targeted to those farmers in Dakota County, and it also pays for the not just the membership fees, but the lease arrangements, where the House only has membership fees, and the Senate specifically targeted to the hailstorm. This was from Senator Moisville in the Senate, specifically targeted to that hailstorm that happened on July 10th, 2008.
Right, and Mr. Knopf, just for discussion purposes, it was Representative Powell's bill in the House, too, and we put it in here. During our committee markup, there was discussion on, you know, we do want to help people, perhaps, some that disagree, but there are some that think we should help folks when there's a disaster in this state, that which happened in Dakota County. However, you know, and it was fair that that group organized and got a bill introduced and came. The discussion our committee became, well, was there anything else that happened anywhere else in the state? You know, Wilmer's got a large farmer's market. Was there an incident out there or other places where they may need assistance, too? And so we made it fairly open so that if your local farmer's market folks had a disaster, too, they could also come and apply. And while the fees might not be $1,000, it might be $500 or $250 or something for some of our local markets. And on a case-by-case basis, we'd certainly like to entertain folks from around the state. Or the other discussion was, even for the folks in Dakota County, it wasn't believed that they all maybe necessarily end up at the St. Paul Farmers Market, but some were at Minneapolis and other places, and we didn't want to exclude them either. So we kind of opened it up, but I think as we discuss that, we'll have to understand what best works and what's fair for everyone, because we are kind of setting a precedent here. If we do this for future folks to come in and bring bills to help small local groups in weather disasters like that, which I'm not saying is appropriate or not, but that's the discussion. So,
Mr. Chair.
Senator Vickerman.
This was brought before the committee because of the hailstorm they had in July.
Right.
As we speak today, I'm supposed to be at another place. They want to put money for Hugo's disaster. So, I'm going to work pretty hard on this, because I think this is what we need to do, and we can just make a note of that.
We'll have more discussion on again, and I don't know if there's any hailstorms in the rest of the state that might need help too, but you know, this bill was introduced, notice has been given, and I hope our farmers market folks and others are listening, because we will take testimony on that as we go forward. All right, Sir Sullivan.
Mr. Chair and members, on page R7,
Chairman, I'm sorry, I just want to make sure we get the language on R6. Dealing with the ethanol payment program, there's some language on 5.34 to 5.35 of the Senate, and it says the second year reduction is a one-time reduction. And if you notice, when Mr. Reinholz was going through the spreadsheet, the Senate only has a one-time reduction for the ethanol program, whereas the base appropriation will be reduced on the House side. So for the out years, and you'll see the language on 6.20 to 6.22 on the House side, that the base appropriation in 2012 is the 12,668, so it's a little bit higher than your appropriation. whereas the Senate would stay with the 15168. And then I also wanted to note on the House side, you do have this publishing on the website on 6.5 to 6.9. It's to post on the website the payments issued under this appropriation, including the amount and recipient of each payment. You won't find similar language like that on the Senate side. I just want to point out those language differences.
Right, and what we'll have to understand mainly in that to staff and members is if it's one time, then clearly it doesn't affect your future targets, and we need to understand how the Senate handled their targets out into the second biennium, and that's where we have the struggle, is trying to set those targets without doing cuts within departments, and I'd love to do one time only if that's possible. So I'll inkle that to you right now. I shouldn't do that, but I will. Mr. Sullivan.
Mr. Chair, on page R7, there are House-only provisions dealing with a new reporting requirement for recipients of ethanol producer payments, and that's on page line 6.23 through 7.5. would require the recipients to submit a letter from the Pollution Control Agency certifying that they were in full compliance with any required permits during the reporting period. 7.6 through 7.13, that's as new eligibility criteria that would say that if the majority ownership of an eligible ethanol plant is sold or otherwise transferred, that plant would no longer be eligible for payment. Page R8, the riders are essentially the same, different appropriations. On R9, the language is the same. R10, is the top of R10 is language about the $50,000 turf seed council appropriations. The House has language to clarify that the funding may not be used for genetic engineering, and any planting conducted with the money must protect existing native prairies from genetic contamination. The House language also specifies that this is a one-time appropriation. The rest of the language on R10 is the same. On page R11, the language is the same except for on the House side, 10.28 through 10.35 is the appropriation to the new 21st Century Agricultural Reinvestment Program with priority for livestock investment grants. And there's a card out for administration as well. Page R12 is Mr. Reinhold's talked about the appropriation to the Minnesota Agricultural Fertilizer Research and Education Council from a fee increase that you'll see later in the side-by-side. And 11.27 on the House side to 11.29 is the appropriation for pilot food projects.
Mr. Chairman, could I just make
a comment?
I just want to make sure I understand the rider on 11.12 through 11.26. It says it's from the Agricultural Fund for Grants for Fertilizer Research as awarded. Is this from the fertilizer account?
Mr. Knopf, yes.
So it is from the fertilizer account.
Yeah.
We should probably specify that because the Ag Fund is a very broad fund.
We increased that 40 cents elsewhere in the bill to pay for that. So, Senator Dill, that's the group we established a couple of years ago. You were one of the task force members along with you, Senator Vickerman, and then Representative Blaine and I were on that. So that's how we fund it going forward. It's I think it's very important. Senator Dill's always been a grumpy that we don't put more money into it because he's a big research guy. Mr. Sullivan.
Mr. Chair, if it's all right, maybe Mr. Knopf could describe the Senate-only provisions on R-12.
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, and again, this is the first one on 9.24, as you talked about earlier on the spreadsheet, that's the Vet Diagnostic Lab. The second one on 9.30, 10.9, actually, on the next page, through 10.5. This is the Star Farms program. There was Senator Chaudhry had a bill in to create a Star Farms program. It's kind of an advancement. I'm so familiar with the LEQA program. And this is more expanding that concept into a broader concept and asking the commissioner to come back with recommendations for setting up a program. He had language that actually set it up, but instead offered this to the budget bill, just to kind of get everybody involved in trying to design such a program.
Mr. Knopf, do you know if I'm the co-author of that in the House, and it came as a clean water bill as part of that? Do you know if Senator Chaudhry is carrying that bill also over, and Ellen Anderson or whoever's doing
Mr. Chairman, not this part of it, not the proposal for the Star Farms. What he has in the Senate's clean water program is basically a ramped up LEQA program for now. So there's some money to deal with the LEQA in there. I think it's $150,000 per year as to kind of phase it in, but then having this report to maybe go beyond that in the future. So that's kind of the idea, is there's some clean water money to continue the LEQA program and actually advance it, and then to have this proposal from general fund, the study, to go beyond that. Then I think the intent may be to use clean water funding in the future if a Star Farms program is established. Because the Star Farms program would, as LEQA does now, would advance the cause of clean water in the state and allowing that reasonable assurance for farms as part of a TMDL plan.
Okay, thank you.
And then, Mr. Chairman, on 10.6 to 10.9, you have the money for the Feeding Minnesota Task Force. The Senate looked at the fiscal note on that and did provide some funding for the commissioner for the administration of that task force.
Okay. Mr. Sullivan.
Mr. Chair, members, on the rest of R13, you'll see the appropriations for the Board of Animal Health and the Agricultural Utilization Research Institute. See differences in appropriations between House and Senate. The Board of Animal Health riders are exactly the same on both sides. You see on the Senate side, there's a rider under AURI.
And Mr. Chairman.
Mr. Kanaan.
On the Board of Animal Health, you notice that the riders are the same. I noticed, going through the spreadsheet, it did show a reduction in the out years in the House side, but I don't see anything that would indicate that in the riders. And same with AURI. And the rider that we're carrying for AURI in 11.3 to 11.6, that's the same rider that was in place in the bill 2 years ago.
Yeah.
The Senate just continued that.
And we'll check with AURI, I know they're in the audience, to see if that's still acceptable or if the dollar amounts have changed or whatever, but we'll work with them. Senator Vickerman, and in full disclosure, and I sit on the board of AURI, so I just want to make sure folks know that too. All right, Mr. Sullivan.
Mr. Chair and members, on page R14, the agricultural policy provisions begin. See the same language on the House and Senate side in Sections 6 and 7 in both bills. These are essentially statutory changes needed to reflect the increase in appropriations for the livestock, or the gray wolf livestock depredation program and the crops, or the elk crop depredation program. On the bottom of R14 begins Section 8 for the House, and that goes on to R15. The House-only provision dealing with the classification of certain data gathered by the Department of Agriculture during the research, monitoring, or assessment of farm practices.
And Mr. Chairman, just to point out,
we
heard this in committee on the Senate side and sent it on to Judiciary, and it is contained in Senate File 863, which is on the floor of the Senate in our data practices bill. Senator Mary Olson is the author on that. The one change that we made, we try not to make rule references on 14.3 to 14.4, so the Senate changed that to a statutory reference of public water supply, because as rules change, we don't have to pick them up in the statutes. It's just a lot cleaner if we do a statutory reference, but that's the only difference in what the Senate committee heard this.
So this would be one of those that are similar on your sheets, members, when you get it, not identical, and we're going to ask staff on both sides to work through some of those similar issues, and ask your advice to come to some agreement and probably adopt whatever Sullivan and Knopf request.
Mr. Chairman, I would note that this the House-only provision is also in the House data practices omnibus bill. Mr. Knopf could maybe describe since they are the Senate-only provision.
Mr. Chairman, Section 8 is a reporting requirement on contracts that's in existing law. It's eliminating, this was a recommendation, this was in the governor's bill, a recommendation of the agency. We really didn't hear a lot about it, but just included it, and nobody seems to be concerned about eliminating that requirement. So that was carried basically as a request of the administration, Section 8. Section 9, this was a provision that Senator Torres Ray worked on. So I think Senator Erickson Rolfenberger offered it as an amendment to Senator Moore's bill, and it deals with farmers markets and kind of this whole connection, also with community-supported agriculture, this connection between farmers. And the department's already required to do a lot with sustainable agriculture as far as demonstrations and promotions. And this was, if you'll see the language on, especially on 13.5 to 13.8, to work cooperatively with the local governments and others to strengthen that connection between basically consumers and sustainable farmers. So that was added again in committee.
Okay. Mr. Sullivan.
Mr. Chair and members, on page R17, the top of that page, the House and Senate have nearly identical language that would increase the maximum amount for the AgBNP loan program. The House has an effective date. Is the difference on those?
And Mr. Chairman, on the Senate side, we also the department came in with recommending on line. If you look on 13.32 on the Senate side, going from $25,000 to $40,000 for the individual loans, and the Senate adopted an amendment to also increase the ones for those loans of four or more individuals, kind of doing a likewise increase. You won't see it on the House side. This was a department bill, but the Senate, the committee amended it to make a like increase in those loans for groups.
Okay, we'll ask for RFA folks to give us some recommendations on that too from the department. Mr. Sullivan.
Mr. Chair, on page R17 in the middle, you see a House-only provision titled Horses that would put a new statute in Chapter 17, Department of Agriculture, that would classify horses, all horses as livestock, and that raising horses and other equines is an agricultural pursuit. You see the Subdivision 3 on page 14.32 would clarify that this does not affect the classification of land for property tax purposes.
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, we've heard a similar provision in committee and sent it on to the Tax Committee, and I haven't really heard much more on that. I think it's still sitting in taxes, but I'm not sure.
Okay. This was an Emmer bill in the House, and I know they've had some problems in Washington County and some of the suburban counties with assessors and others. You're right, and they're not allowing farm classification for some of the horse raising operations. At least that's how it was explained to us. So,
Mr. Chair,
Senator Vickerman.
Meeting with Senator Scoy the other day, and he was very persuasive that should be in the tax bill and not definition.
Well, and again, Senator Vickerman, that's why we said it doesn't apply to taxes, so we could keep it here. I think the definition of livestock certainly is an ag issue, and I know Senator Dill's been working hard on some of these issues too, and we just want to make sure that at least we're defining what livestock is and not the tax committee. We don't want them changing our definitions on any agricultural items. Now, if they want to deal with the tax implications on them, I think that's fine. And that's why if there's other comfort language, I mean, we did put it in here. They can carry it in the Senate bill. What we're doing does not affect Chapter 273 in the tax area is what we put. But we can further that discussion as we go forward. But again, I think we want to make sure we're telling people what livestock is and not the tax committee or Senator Scoy. And I love him, but you got to come over here and work with us. All right, Mr. Sullivan.
Mr. Chair, members, on page R17, the bottom, beginning on Section 11 on the House side, Section 11 also on the Senate side, are the first of many provisions and many pages that modify the state's noxious weed law. The language on the House and Senate sides on page R17 are the same. Moving to page R18, continuing with noxious weed law, on the Senate side, on their line 14.25 begins a section that also defines or changes the definition of control in that statute, and would specify that control measures do not cause unreasonable adverse effects on the environment.
And Mr. Chairman, that was an amendment in the Senate committee. What it does is it's really more of a cross-reference, because right now it's illegal to cause unreasonable adverse effects on the environment under the pesticide law, and what this does is just cross-reference to make sure that people know that when they're controlling that they have to comply with that.
Mr. Sullivan.
Mr. Chair, members, the rest of page R18 are essentially identical. There's one small difference in Section 18 of the House side, Section 17 of the Senate side, technical, grammatical in nature. Moving to R19, to continue with noxious weed law, the first three sections on the House side, 20, 21, and 22, House and Senate are identical. On Section 23 of the House side, Cooperative Weed Control Agreement, the House language would authorize a commissioner, municipality, or county agricultural inspector to enter into cooperative weed control agreements. The Senate language would authorize the commissioner, who's the Department of Agriculture, in this case a township or a county agricultural inspector. So that's the difference between the two sides. Municipality is a defined term in Chapter 18 and includes towns and cities.
Mm-hmm.
Moving on to the end of page R19, the language is similar except on line 17.14 and 17.15 on the House side. The House language would require a county to make the identity of a county designated employee available to the public. And just briefly, Under the changes to Noxious Weed Law, a county could appoint a county agricultural inspector or alternatively could designate another employee to carry out noxious weed duties, similar but different and lesser duties in the county. Page R20, more noxious weeds. You see a difference on House Side 17.17. Entry upon land will be authorized by, in the House language, an inspector or a county-designated employee. The Senate doesn't have the county-designated employee. And then line 17.20 through 17.25 on the House side are House only, and they would require an inspector or county-designated employee to wear distinctive clothing that would include an acronym on the shirt or jacket of the phrase Weed Inspection and Mitigation Program, or WIMP.
WIMP. Can we move on?
Yeah, let's move on. Let's get away from that.
I think everyone knows what that is. All right.
Mr. Chair, on the next change, or next difference, is on 17.31 of the House side and 17.32, again requiring a county to publicly identify a county-designated employee who would carry out weed control duties. On 18.3 on the House side is also House-only language that would require the Department of Agriculture to provide technical assistance to county employees to aid in their performance of their responsibilities under the Noxious Weed Law. The rest of page R20, I believe, are the same on the House and Senate side, as are all of the provisions on page R21. On page R22, the House has language starting on 19.18 and going to 19.21 that would require the Department of Agriculture to maintain noxious weed law and other information on its website. Moving down to line 20.7 on the House side, I think that these changes, if I'm not mistaken, the difference between the House and Senate are technical, and both provisions would accomplish the same thing. And that's also the same at the end of page R22. There are differences in language, but I believe the net result is the same.
Mr. Chairman, Mr. Sullivan, the big difference in Section 27 in the House and Section 26 on the Senate is that the Senate amends existing language for the optional duties, and you see on 19.2 on the Senate, we actually put that in the title, because these are, how they're dividing this up is that for the ag inspectors, we have the optional duties. And for the county designated employees, there's a mandatory duties you'll see later on. In the House side, you carried all this new language. One issue is that in the House side, the existing law would still be there for subdivision one. What we did is just amended the existing law to kind of reflect this new way of doing things. I think that something should be done with subdivision one. If you're going to do this, you either need to amend it or just repeal it.
And on all these noxious weed things, members, we clearly, I think everyone understands, there was a very, I think, tightly knit group that has been working to recodify and revamp these. And, you know, we were very careful to try and listen to them. And I would suggest that the groups, who I know are sitting here, along with Mr. Sullivan and Knoth, talk about what works the best and then come and advise us through testimony here in the next few days, because I don't think we want to upset that apple cart, and they were a good working group, and I know we both bodies heard from them. So I'm going to advise them over the next day or so to get with our research folks and get together and then come and advise us what works best, and I think it'll be easier to get through this. Mr. Solomon.
Mr. Chair, on page R23, continuing with the Noxious Weed Law, you see the bold heading at the bottom. Towards the bottom of the page, it's different, and again, as you mentioned, it's important that the language at the end make very clear the legislature's intent regarding the responsibilities of inspectors and county-designated employees.
And Mr. Chairman, just one other thing. I'm not sure. On 19.19 on the Senate side, to administer and distribution of funds allocated to county boards, we also include an or county-designated employee, and the House does not have that. I'm not sure if they don't want them handling the money or what that's, or if that's, I'm not sure. Not sure.
Okay. Well, Mr. Chair, as you mentioned, the language that the House has on the House side was worked out by a group, and the House position was essentially to use the language provided by that group and to go with what
I believe the House assumed with the
and we'll get all that. And again, I'm asking them to continue working and come back to us rather than us arguing here. I'd like to hear from that group and make sure we're moving forward in a good direction.
Mr. Chair, page R24 and R25, I believe, are the same.
But except, Mr. Chairman, on 25.5, again, for the individual notice on the Senate side, it says an inspector or county-designated employee. On the House side, it says and it's just an inspector for the individual notice. So,
what line are you on?
It's 21.5 on the Senate or 22.14 on the House. We added or county-designated employee for the individual notice, and the House does not have that.
See?
Mr. Chair, page R26, continues not to speed law changes. I believe the language on both sides is the same. As well as on page R27, there are differences on page R28 with not to speed law. Most are technical. However, on lines 24.29 and 24.30 on the Senate side, again, there's a four county designated employee was added, and I believe that would require a municipality to pay for the activities of a county designated employee when they're performing duties within the geographic boundaries of the municipality.
Okay.
And on the bottom of that page, R28, you see there's just a difference in accounting. The House sets up a fund within the state treasury. The Senate sets up an account within the agricultural fund.
Okay.
The only difference that I spotted on page R29 reflects that difference in accounting as well. On 26.20 on the House side, we specify the fund. On 25.13 on the Senate side, we discuss the account. Moving on to page R30, is the end, well, not quite the end of the noxious weed law. I believe the language on the top of that page of R30 is the same. On page R30, there's an advisory committee, an actual advisory committee created by both sides. With that language is the same on R30. And R31 is the end of the noxious weed language. It ends on 28.35 on the House side, 27.30 on the Senate side. There's, a small technical difference between the two sides in that language. And then if we look at page 29.1, line 29.1 on the House side, that begins House File 510, which has, you can see, companion language on the Senate side dealing with pesticide control law, as well as fertilizer control law. There are technical differences in the new definitions created on both sides for agricultural pesticide. And then you see the House has a new definition for a new regulated entity called an agricultural pesticide dealer. That appears on 29.6 through 29.10. And this is the beginning, really, of the House-only language that would modify how gross sales and registration fees are levied on.
And members, clearly there's big differences here, but I, Senator Bickerman, I think part of it was a fiscal thing. I know you maybe shied away from some fees and other things where we took the department's recommendation in fees. And for all this pesticide language, again, the manufacturers, the department, everyone involved with it, Bill Bond's group, the retailers and others, sat down and put all this language together on how they think it will work going into the future. And again, I'd rely on that group to come and provide us testimony should we decide to go with those fees and other things on if this language then is their preferred language. And we don't have to get deep in the weeds, so to speak, here, but I want those groups to be prepared to testify and talk about what they're going to do should we decide to go with these fees. So I just want to heads up, we don't have to spend a lot of time on that, members, at this point. It's really the pesticide fees, and depends if we decide to accept the fees or not. Yep. Senator Bickerman.
We looked at that. It was over $5 million in fees, and I didn't think we ought to do that to our farmers, so we'll see. And Senator Coring says, well, don't kid anybody. A fee's a tax. You're trying to fool here.
We're not, well, we can name it a tax if you want. I'm a Democrat. I don't care what you call it. So. But just, if you need the money, you need the money. And so let's not hide anything, Senator Bickerman. And we'll have the department come up and talk about that and how they're going to use the money and whether why the importance and why the time to raise it now. And regardless of whether we raise the money,
the way it's paid is changing the house, and that's substantial difference, and that's what this group worked on. Rather, it turns it, rather than a wholesale tax, into a retail tax, essentially, which our retailers think will work better, as well as our manufacturers and others. So it's a new concept in Minnesota on how the fees are paid, which could actually become a model for other states. They think they've got some ideas here that are very unique and actually streamline the process a little better. So we'll want to talk about that and listen intently to that work group that was set up.
Mr. Chair?
Mr. Knopf.
I just want to add to that, too. The Senate saw the language for this real late in the process.
Sure.
And I'm not convinced that the language works properly yet, including the way it is in the Senate, in the House side,
right.
Because of the way, because what you've got to do is you have to phase in the implementation. I think there's some better ways to do that, but I wasn't sure what was what they were planning on doing. So,
and again, I'd ask the manufacturers and the retailers and others department to sit down the next couple of days. We have a lot of assignments, but to sit down with Mr. Knopf and Sullivan and make sure the language is workable should we decide to accept it. I'd rather not work out language issues here, but I'd rather have you all do it offline on those types of things and then bring back recommendations to us as far as our time goes in this committee. So I appreciate you working on that. I know you're going to be busy for the next few days, but maybe not in August if we do this right. So, all right, Mr. Sullivan.
Mr. Chair, members, on the bottom of R31, both the House and Senate modified the definition of distribute in Chapter 18B, pesticide control, to include now products that are sold, shipped, barter, delivered, etc., into the state as well as in the state. Moving on to page R32, both the House and Senate create a new definition for non-agricultural pesticides, and those would be products that do not have worker protection standard labeling required by the federal government. And as I didn't point out before, the agricultural pesticide products would be those products that do have worker protection standards information on their label. On 29.20 on the House side, both the House and Senate make modifications to the Department of Agriculture's waste pesticide collection program, but they do so in different ways. And one example of that is beginning on 29.20 on the House side. The House changes from residential to the new defined term non-agricultural pesticide, and clarifies that pesticide generated in another state is not eligible for collection under the program. Moving down to beginning on line 30.7 on the House side and 28.17 on the Senate side, I won't go into this in great detail now, but basically both sides changed the frequency of collections for pesticide products in the state. We'll talk about that more later, or now if members have questions. And those changes, you'll see there are differences in language continuing through the bottom of R32.
And again, members, this was a section on both, I imagine, both sides that took an inordinate amount of time, and there's been a lot of people working on this. So whether we agree on everything or not, I'm asking those groups and our staff to get together as much as possible and try and iron out the differences here rather than us doing it ad nauseum here in this committee like we've done over the last 3 months, which I'm happy to do in committee. But again, for our time, put together as much as you can where there's disagreements in the groups and the different bodies, then that's what we'll have to sort out as a committee, Senator Vickerman. But if we can come to some agreement on most of it and make a recommendation to the group, that will be helpful rather than us now spending the next half hour going through these rather large sections. Mr. Sullivan.
Mr. Chair, on page R33 continues changes to the waste pesticide collection program. There are differences in the top section between the House and Senate. And then on 30.27 begin House-only provisions that would require an annual department report. And further down, there are cooperative agreements between the department and local units of government to collect pesticides that would allow the department to establish limits as a part of the cooperative agreement. And notably, on the bottom of R33, the House language creates a new surcharge on all pesticide products of $50 per product to pay for the waste pesticide collection program.
And again, members, that's one of those fees that we'll have to talk about, but was brought to us by the department.
Page R34, House-only language, create a new account for the waste pesticide collection program to hold the new fee generated in the previous section, and would appropriate that money for the payment of cooperative agreements between the department and local units of government, or in the absence of those agreements, for the department's own collection activities. On 32.3, section 52 of the House side begins a provision that continues the House only modifications to the pesticide fee system. That continues in section 53 on the House side with modifications to the current pesticide product registration and gross sales fee system. It would essentially create a new designation between agricultural pesticides and non-agricultural pesticides, increase the gross sales fee on both products, and move the collection of the agricultural pesticide product, as you mentioned, Mr. Chair, from the registrant or manufacturer level to the dealer or a retailer level. That language continues on page R36 and R37. And Mr. Knopf mentioned, you see, beginning, this might not be the first one, but it's definitely an example of an involved effective date in the House language, reflecting the complexity and overlap between the transition between the old way of collecting information and fees and the new system. On the bottom of R37, section 54 on the House side, is continuation of the modification of the pesticide fees, which continues on R38 and R39 and R40 down to the bottom, where the House and Senate both have a new statute titled Pesticide Application on Railroad Property. As I look through the two provisions, they are identical except for a very small grammatical difference. And then section 58 on the House side, being on line 39.12, is again back to a change dealing with the pesticide fee system. On section 59 of the House side and section 47 of the Senate, you see language that modifies the fertilizer soil amendment and plant amendment statute. Both sides have the same language on the bottom of R41 and on all of R42. On R43, the language is the same, except for an important difference. On section 62 on the House side and section 50 of the Senate side, the House also would increase the fertilizer, plant amendment, and soil amendment inspection fee by 40 cents per ton, and that's the amount that's appropriated in the rider language to the Fertilizer Research Council. We estimate that would generate about an extra $800,000 in revenue. The bottom of R43 is the change to the ACRA program recommended by the governor. That continues on R44, where the House and Senate language handle the situation a little differently. Essentially, the department could use money in the ACRA account, which is a surcharge assessed on pesticide products and several regulated entities that deal with pesticides, to pay for chemical spills, fertilizer entities, I believe, as well, to pay for chemical spills. Beginning on R44, section 64 is a House-only provision that is back to the agricultural pesticide dealer changes. Those continue through R45. And R46 down to line 44.8, those are corresponding changes to the ACRA program to reflect the new fee structure. On section 66, line 44.9 of the House bill begins a new House file. I don't have the number, but it deals with regulations regarding packaged nursery stock to prevent etiolated growth or bleached or unnatural growth resulting from a lack of sunlight. Those provisions continue at the end of R46.
Mr. Chairman, that's moving separately in the Senate side. Senator Scogin has Bill Senate File 485. I think he has it on the floor right now.
Yep. So it has passed out of committee.
Right, and it's waiting in general orders on the Senate floor.
What's that? It has passed the House floor, too, already. So so if we decide to put it in here, probably not a big problem, but we'll see what happens.
Mr. Chair, would you like me to bring that as an amendment?
Yes. Okay. Well, we can, if it's the same as the House language, at that point we can accept House language if you're comfortable with it. But again, we'll take your advice on what language to adopt.
Okay.
All right. On the bottom of R46, section 70 on the House side is a change to the timing of the deadline for the application for nursery stock grower certificates. There's a similar change to the nursery stock dealer certificate in section 71 on the House side on page R47.
And again, members, the reason you're seeing a lot of this in the House language is because we just pulled all those bills and put them in here that were out on the general register. So I believe most of them probably have passed your committee and or are on the general register or have passed the general register. So you're seeing a
them here. And again, if we can get this bill done and out of here next week, we don't have to worry about all those individual bills laying out there anymore for the next 3 weeks.
And Mr. Chairman, just to be clear, all the nursery stock requirements are in Senator Scogas' bill all the way through page R49.
Good. Good. All right.
Mr. Chair, members, then I'll quickly...
Chair, Senator Vickerman.
A little bit of difference. Our instructions were to not accept any policy, just like... So that's the difference
right.
between...
Right. And in our case, leadership said do whatever you want because you're the chair. So we appreciate that in the House. So that's how we do things over there. But I appreciate that, and that's why... We said we could either put together one bill with everything or we could do separate bills or individual bills. They really left it up to the committees and the members, and we just decided to put them. It's so much, and again, I think people can appreciate this, it's so much easier to bring one ag bill to the floor and debate it and fight off amendments or discussions than to bring 14 little bills, and you're always open to. And so we tend to, and I think you agree philosophically, it's a lot nicer to package it all in one, bring it, have one floor fight or one discussion one day, and then we're done. So that's why we choose to do it that way, but I understand you were under some different guidelines over in the Senate. Mr. Sullivan.
Mr. Chair, and the members, the changes to the nursery stock law continue through the top of R49. The middle of R49, line 47.8 on the House side is a corresponding provision on the Senate side. Both bodies adopted the administration's recommendation to increase the food handler reinspection fees.
So you did have some fee increases, Senator Vickerman. How'd you let them slip through?
That
little one. Okay, I gotcha.
The bottom of R49, the House and Senate both have changes to the statute creating and setting out duties for the Food Safety and Defense Task Force.
Mr. Chairman, I just want to make sure we're clear. You'll see that on R49 above the Senate, S-484-2.
What is that?
That means that this is actually contained in a separate bill. It's not. It wasn't in the Senate omnibus bill. We brought it in here because it actually passed the Senate the other day.
Okay.
So this has already passed the Senate, language, in a separate bill.
All right, good.
Mr. Chair and members, an important difference. R50 is the same. I believe R51 contains a difference on the Senate side. Senate line 3.7 would expand the Minnesota Organic Advisory Task Force to include a representative of organic product retailers.
And, Mr. Chairman, there's a corresponding change. If you look on 2.34, what the Senate did is took retailers. Right now it says two organic food wholesalers, retailers, or distributors. And what the Senate did was took the retailers out of that, so it could be wholesalers or distributors, and then made just to make sure that there was one retailer on this group.
Okay.
And there's also some other reworking of the language a little bit on the Senate side.
It'll be one of those similar items that hopefully won't take as long as we move forward. Mr. Sullivan.
Mr. Chair, continuing on R52. The end of the organic task force. The
so again, I assume the S-1779-2 means it's passed. Is that another signal that that's a bill that's off the Senate floor, Mr. Knott?
Mr. Chairman, yes.
All right.
Well, Mr. Chairman, there's one thing I wanted to point out, though, too, on the changes on the organic advisory task force. The House has an effective date of June 30th, 2009.
Yep.
That's probably a good idea because I think it expires on that date otherwise, and if we it would otherwise be effective on July 1, I guess there would be some issues with whether it expired and okay. went forward.
Very good.
Mr. Chair and members, just for my clarification, on R52, I believe the S-177.9-2 signals that we're returning back to the Senate's omnibus bill, Agriculture and Veterans.
Oh, yeah, Mr. Chairman. Yes, Mr. Sullivan, that's exactly right. This was contained in here. You're right. This is just because we're going back. That's a good point.
I see. Okay.
Mr. Chair. On R52, both bodies create a new Feeding Minnesota task force with several differences. House language would require a definition of hungry people by the task force's second meeting. Both bodies describe the members, the composition of the task force in different ways. You'll see that in the bottom of R52. On page R53, there are some important differences. The House specifies that task force members may not be compensated under a specific statute dealing with task force member compensation. Right across from that, the Senate language would require the Department of Agriculture to provide staff and other support. Both bodies require a report. However, the House language tells the department to establish or convene a task force no later than the 31st of January 2010 and to report by November 1st, 2010. In the Senate language, the task force would also draft necessary legislation, report as well to the ranking minority members, and report to the Agriculture Finance Committee by February 1st, 2010. So February 1st, 2010 versus the House is November 1st, 2010. The Senate language would also require the task force to report thereafter as necessary. The two bodies also had different expiration dates on line 50.19 on the House side. The task force would expire November 1st, 2010, and on the Senate side it would expire later, June 30th, 2011. Mr. Chair and members, Section 78 on the House side and 54 on the Senate side are similar. Both bodies would increase the reinspection fee for milk producers. However, the House would increase the fee from $45 to $100, while the Senate would create a tiered system based on the number of cows in the operation. Bottom of R53, the House-only provision in Section 79, and this is the beginning of the House's pickup of the governor's language that would create the new agricultural, or 21st century agricultural Ag 21 program. And the changes that you see on R54 are essentially to change the ethanol producer payment statute so that any excess appropriations as the plant's eligible for regular payments wind down in 2010 and the deficiency payments are made up over time, any excess appropriation for ethanol producer payments would go to the Ag 21 program.
And again, members, as to that, I think we're all in agreement. We want to protect as much as we can those base dollars, move them into a fund that we can use for next generation energy grants, livestock investment grants, and other rural economic development things. And I'll give the assignment I've given our members, and they failed me all session long, but I'll give it to you people over in the Senate. If we can think of another name besides Ag 21, every time you have ethanol produced payments or you have something that says agriculture becomes a target for our colleagues on the floor to say, why are we giving that to ag? And why are we, if you could think of another name, you could go down in history in this bill and we'll carry it forward as long as it's, not named, but we can't name it after Senator Dill because he's living, according to Representative Tanya. You have to be dead to name a fund after you. But if you can think of another name besides Ag, and I appreciate the work on the department. I think we're strongly in agreement. We need to set up a fund for our base dollars going into the future for these projects. But think of some, while you're driving back and forth from your home or whatever.
Mr. Chair, has Flush been ever used?
Flush, we'll put it on the list, and maybe we can vote at the end of the conference committee what's the name of it. My folks, I've been asking them all year, and they haven't come up with nothing. So, and I haven't either. I came up with one, and apparently it's already been used. So, yeah, all right. But that's our assignment. If we can come up with otherwise, we'll stick with Ag 21 for now.
Mr. Chairman, could I just add something on the Senate side?
Have you got a suggestion for the name?
I don't have a suggestion for the name.
Staff is included in this, by the way. So.
Well, Mr. Chairman, one of the reasons that you don't see that on the Senate side is the Senate thought that it was a little bit premature and it wasn't well-defined enough to include. And the money's still there,
right?
And we probably won't really have a lot of extra money in this biennium anyway, so thought maybe it could use a little more work.
I can tell you, Mr. Knopf and members of the Senate, it came in as an amendment during our markup period. It wasn't something that was in the original bill that I introduced or wrote as the chair for the markup, but it did come in as an amendment that was accepted by us, so we'll certainly discuss, and we acquiesce that, the next biennium, those monies aren't going to be captured in there because there are two bienniums out before we really need to make that decision. So, Mr. Sullivan.
Mr. Chair, page R54 and R55 are all the ethanol producer payment statutes. The change is small to redirect the money to Ag 21, and that appears on R56 at the top, lines 53.21 through 53.26. And then below that, Section 81 of the House bill would create the new 21st century agricultural reinvestment program. On the bottom of R56, there are changes to the Rural Finance Authority's loan program, several expansions of the maximum loan amount or loan participation amount that the state would buy of a loan issued by a private lender. The differences that I could spot in R56 and R57 dealing with the different RFA programs are the effective dates on the House side.
Okay.
Those, the RFA changes go through the top of page R58. On R58, Section 87 on the House side modifies the chapter dealing with the Department of Natural Resources, and it would authorize the DNR in consultation with the Department of Agriculture and the Board of Animal Health to capture and control non-native or domestic animals that are at large.
Members, this is a feral pig language. It came in late. Working with Department of Ag and DNR brought it to us. We agreed to put it in. Apparently out in western Minnesota, we have some pictures, and we can bring them in, of some roadkill and other things that appeared to be feral pigs. And again, Senator Dill and others who work with Livestock know what a huge problem this is in other states, and actually some of our surrounding states do have them. So this, for now, would describe how those two departments can handle them, that they can take these animals and eliminate them, that there's no penalties, et cetera, et cetera. So just want to point that out. I don't think it's controversial. Came in late, but certainly something I think we need to carry forward if indeed we have feral animals showing up in this state.
Mr. Chair, members, on R58, Section 88 on the House side is a modification of the E10 ethanol mandate, and it would require the R ethanol mandate at E10 to ratchet up as applicable to any amount authorized by the U.S. EPA in a waiver under the Clean Air Act.
And members, I think this is important as you look at the Obama administration now in Washington. They're actually talking about going to a national E12 or E13. If this isn't in our statute, we don't automatically go up to their level from E10. And so what this basically says is that our current statutes remain. We're going to E20 or hope to go to E20 in a couple of years. But in the interim, if there's a switch on the federal level, we actually would correspond to whatever they set those levels at. And that could happen as early as September when they're closing down their fiscal year and starting the new. And we went to actually be prepared in Minnesota until we came back next session. So we thought it important to put this in just in case the feds change that amount. So I hope there's no controversy there. There certainly was no discussion in the House on it. And I just want to give you a little background on that.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Beckerman.
I think it's more important. Every time I pick up the paper, they take another shot at they did today again. They don't need it. Somebody doesn't understand what's going on here. So I think it's good we put it in.
Good. Mr. Sullivan.
Mr. Chair, on R59, Section 89 is similar. Right now the statute's set up so that the E20 mandate will go into effect on August 30th, 2013 if certain criteria are met. So there's a corresponding change made to that statute as well.
Mr. Chairman, could I just add,
Mr. Knopf?
If you look at 57.17, you may want to think about if you're going to adopt this to also make a change to that, because right now, on December 31st, 2010, this subdivision goes away unless you've gotten approval for E20. So if you're going to get approval for less than E20, you may want to just amend that expiration date. Otherwise, you could get the approval for something less than E20, and then this would go away and you wouldn't have it anyways.
Sure. Let's make sure we tighten that language up. That shouldn't be a problem.
Mr. Chair and members, moving on to page R60 through 61, 62, 63, and the top of 64 are all House-only provisions that would amend the Farmer Lender Mediation Act so that a lender who was attempting to collect on a delinquent debt from a farmer would have to include the amount of the outstanding debt in the mandatory mediation notice.
And certainly members will talk about this. It's a lengthy section, but it's very small, the changes in there. Basically, and you can think about it, but I don't think we'll have much disagreement. We think information is good, and one of the problems we're having, and I know you have the debate on setting what's that minimus level for triggering a mediation request, and I think you talked of going from 5 to 10,000. We wrestled with that at 10,000 or 20,000, should left at 5. The problem is when someone files a mediation notice, they do not include a dollar amount that they want to be mediated. And so what this would do is require over the summer, fall, into next year, as mediation notices are filed, you also have to include, here's the debt that I'm filing for. And so what that allows the extension service then to track that and bring us back information, good information, on what the actual mediated requests are for, because right now we're kind of shooting blanks on that. We really don't know what it is. So rather than we decided rather than acting on a de minimis level at this time, and we can certainly do that in this committee yet too, we'd gather some more information, come back next year in the off year and have full hearings on this, bring the bankers and the implement dealers and everyone else that utilizes this system,
and then hopefully armed with some additional information, make those determinations is what we had talked about. We could even do that in a joint meeting next year, Senator Vickerman, so we're all on the same page with it. But we can move further. But that all this language is just a couple lines of change. I wanted to point that out. It's not substantial. Senator Rope.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just to let the committee know, I carried this bill on the House side, and there was an amendment added in the Judicial Committee that didn't make it into the engrossment, so I'll be bringing that to the table here as an amendment.
Okay. Good. Mr. Sullivan.
Mr. Chair, picking up on the middle of R64, both the House and Senate would expand the expiration date for the Farmer Lender Mediation Act from June 30th, 2009 to June 30th, 2013. Effective following final enactment. On the bottom of R64, there's a House-only provision that deals with the elimination of interagency staffing agreements between the entities funded under this article and the governor's office. Page R65, both the House and Senate have a provision related to the bovine tuberculosis control assessment that's levied on cattle sold in the state. The difference is the House has new language while the Senate modifies laws 2008.
Yeah, Mr. Chairman.
Mr. Knopf.
The House is carrying the administration's language, and I don't know why the governor's bill had an all-new language. It should have been amending the existing one, because if you adopt the House language, there's already an assessment that's sitting out there from last year. It almost seems like you'd have two assessments going on. And I think amending... I actually wrote this for the administration last summer, but I wrote it as a change to the existing law. I don't know how it got converted over to new language, but I really think you should do what's on the Senate side, because otherwise you're going to have two assessments sitting out there on the books.
Okay, we'll take a look at that and confer with the other staff on that, too. Mr. Sullivan.
Mr. Chair, on the bottom of R65, there are two House-only sections. One would require the Department of Agriculture to study the economic and technological feasibility of producing ethanol from whey. That's section 98. Section 99.
That was an Erdahl bill in the House.
Section 99 requires a green jobs food production study by the Agricultural Utilization Research Institute. On section 100 in the House side is the pilot food project, where the appropriation is in the rider language. This is the language to accompany that. Section 101 requires the Department of Agriculture to apply for any applicable federal stimulus dollars available for areas that are under the department's purview. Section 102 would require a report on Minnesota processed foods labeling that would be similar to the Minnesota grown labeling program.
That was a Shemansky amendment.
And Mr. Chairman,
I would point out, too, for the pilot food projects and the one before that were Clark bills in the House. The pilot food project in particular is interesting because it's growing on what we're trying to do in this state, which is bring locally grown foods into our schools. And then this would allow a demonstration project in rural, metro, urban, suburban, and on an Indian reservation. So four projects to demonstrate how we can get those local fresh foods into our classroom or into our school lunch programs, which I know the Extension Service has been working with. And Clark thought if we put some real definitive demo projects out there, we could inspire other schools to start doing that. So just so you know what that is. Mr. Sullivan.
That House-only language continues on the top of R67 regarding the Minnesota processed foods labeling. Section 103 goes along with the expansion of authority for the Commissioner of Natural Resources to control feral swine. There's also a report required under this section. And maybe I'll let Mr. Knopf talk about the uncodified deadline for appointments. The House has one corresponding provision.
Mr. Knopf.
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, members, what the Senate does is we have the deadline, the 31.94, that's the, again, that's from Senate File 484, and that's the Organic Advisory Task Force. And then the deadline for appointments in Section 62, that's the Feeding Minnesota Task Force, and then we both have deadline for appointments on the Noxious Weed Advisory Task Force. So we tend on this. Mr. Bodner can speak to that in the state government, state and local government committee in the Senate, try to make sure that these appointments are completed by a certain date for all the task forces and groups that we create.
Okay.
Mr. Chair, members, the last two house-only provisions in the agricultural article are on R68, sections 105 and 106. 105 modifies a 2007, I believe, appropriation to the Board of Animal Health and would allow the board to make one-time grants to certain beef cattle producers who are participating in the herd buyout program.
Was that carried in a separate bill in the Senate?
Yeah, Chairman, Senator Stumpf had this in the Senate. It was sent to Finance, and there was a fiscal notice associated with it, and it still hasn't made it through.
Kind of disappeared.
Yeah, I'm not sure what happened. But there was a fiscal cost. I don't know if this is reflecting that or not.
Well, we took testimony, and this is apparently what Board of Animal Health can work with, so I think it'll work. But we can have them confirm that the length. It's obviously we got to make this payment. There was a glitch in the system in northern Minnesota, as you know, where one of the farms in the buyout, when they got to market, their cattle tested positive and they didn't know it. And so we're trying to make that person whole. And I think it's agreed on by everyone. And I think the way it's here should be fiscally covered by the Board of Animal Health. They were fine with it in committee anyways. So we'll confirm that and hopefully get it in here so we can take care of that. Mr. Sullivan.
Mr. Chair, members, on R68, section 106 on the House side would require the Department of Agriculture to seek tenants to rent out, to rent unused office space in the Freeman Building. And the department would be required to report back to the legislature. And then the final on 66.5 begins an appropriation. Any amounts raised under this section would be appropriated to the department for livestock investment grants under the new Ag 21 program.
Mm-hmm.
Both the House and the Senate have a repealer on the bottom of R68. They're largely the same with a couple of important differences. The House repeals Statute 18G.12, Subdivision 5, which is an annual invasive species report to the legislature by the Department of Agriculture. And on 66.12, the House also repeals a rule that is superseded by the new changes to statute regarding packaged nursery stock.
And Mr. Chairman, I think those are contained in Senate File 484, but in Senator Stogan's bill, but they just don't show up here in the repealer. They only show the repealer from the actual.
All right, double check those and make sure there's no problem with them.
And Mr. Chairman, there is one additional repealer on the Senate side. On 36.20, you'll see the repealer of 84.02. That's the requirement, that's the 25-mile requirement for planting native species that was enacted 2 years ago. The Senate committee felt very strongly about including a repealer of that provision. And then we also have an effective date on the repealer that would make all those repealers effective the day following final enactment.
Very good. Thank you. Mr. Sullivan.
Mr. Chair, finishing up with agriculture, Article 2 is on page R69. Both bodies would authorize $35 million in general fund bond proceeds to the Rural Finance Authority for loans to farmers under statutory programs. Of note, lines 37.7 and 37.8 on the Senate side would allow the Rural Finance Authority to use a portion of the appropriation to pay bond sales expenses.
Yeah, Mr. Chairman,
Mr. Knoth.
If I remember right, a couple of years ago when this appropriation was made, that language was included. I'm not sure why it's not on the House side.
Okay, we'll check that out.
And, Mr. Chair, the last difference to notice is lines 67.3 and 67.4 on the House side clarify that if this provision is enacted more than once during this session, that this provision should be given effect only once.
Right, and it's carried, it's over in the bonding bill, it's here in this bill, it's a standalone bill, and so that's just technical language instructing that, no, we only get to pass that once. So, all right. Veterans Affairs. Mr. Cleary, are you doing that?
Yes, I'd be happy to.
All right.
My counterpart, Mr. Chairman.
And then,
Yes. Members, veterans policy issues begin on page R72 with section 3 on the House side. And I just point out that just about all these provisions are House provisions. Section 3 is part of House File 1880, a Severson bill, along with sections 8 and 16.
And again, members, we're starting with the policy. You see rider differences clearly, but that matched up with the spreadsheet differences, and we'll have to talk about those and get some testimony on them, but that's why we're skipping to R72.
Yes, Mr. Chairman, just the policy provision. Section 3 comes from House File 1880, a Severson bill dealing with veterans' preferences, veterans' preference for hiring into the state civil service. Section 3 directs that state hiring authorities must grant an interview to any qualified applicant who's a recently returning veteran.
And was this a similar bill in the Senate somewhere?
Mr. Chairman, this is included in Senate Bill 1982, which is Senator Gerlach's bill. That's currently in the Finance Committee. It is moving through the Senate.
Okay.
Members, Section 4 is from House File 1940, the broad bill, dealing with the State Employee Group Insurance Program. It provides that a veteran returning from deployment who was a full-time student immediately before going on deployment may be covered as a dependent under his parent's state employee group insurance program.
And again, members, we think this only affects a couple people. As you know now, we changed the law that you can be covered up to age 25 if you're a student. The glitch in that was if you serve overseas and come back, that line is broken. And so we want to make sure if you come back and re-enroll that you can still be carried. I don't think it's a big deal. I assume it was a bill perhaps. It was a broad bill here. Was it a bill in the Senate?
Yes. Mr. Chairman, you want to talk to Senator Vickerman about that?
Is that your bill?
That's right. Good.
Okay. Well, we maybe just made our first step in getting this bill done. All right.
Members, that carries through. Section 4 carries through R-73 onto R-74, and then there's the Senate provision.
Okay.
And Mr. Chairman, on the Senate side of R-74, you'll see the language that creates the Gold Star license plate. That's a bill that was authored by Senator Scogin. The Department of Public Safety has told us there's a small technical amendment that's needed. What I will point out there is obviously it creates this new license plate, and then you'll see on the top of R-75 that this allows the Commissioner of Veterans Affairs to use money that's in the Support Our Troops account to pay for the cost of production of those plates.
Okay. Do we know if that was a House file anywhere?
Mr. Chairman, it had been in past years in various forms, but not it didn't move this year.
Okay.
Mr. Chairman, members, may I point out on that on line 3819, I read that as indicating that the person who receives this plate is not exempted from a registration tax, a motor vehicle registration tax. Is that right? Okay.
Okay. Yep.
Currently, only former POWs are exempted from that tax.
All right.
Okay. On page R-75, we have Section 5 on the House side. This is part of the House File 572 dealing with veterans designation. And it's actually 5, 6, and 7 go together here. Section 5 provides that a veteran may request the veterans designation on the person's driving license and driving records. Section 6 stipulates that the veteran must show proof of military service by means of a certified copy of the veteran's discharge paper when applying for that. And Section 7 directs the Commissioner of Veterans Affairs to keep a computer record of veterans who have requested that veteran's designation. And part of that reason is that it's very difficult for Veterans Affairs to know where veterans are located throughout the state of Minnesota, so that over time that would become a handy file.
Was there a Senate file on this?
Mr. Chairman, the provisions in Section 5 and Section 6 are, Section 6 is a little bit different on the Senate side. They're in Senate File 1014, that's Senator Clark's bill. That was heard in committee and I believe is in the Finance Committee at the moment. The language in Section 7 has not been heard on the Senate side.
Yeah, and that was brought to us by the department during markup. Again, as research said, we have no idea where veterans in this state live. It's an amazing thing, and we've been working on that with the federal records. So what we are allowing is that data to be transferred to Department of Veterans Affairs. Should the veteran choose to put it on the driver's license, it's their choice. They would also choose then to allow the department to have that information so we can contact them and know where they're at in the state. I think it's a very important movement in the direction of discovering where our veterans are so we can serve them. Kate?
And Mr. Chairman, I'll just point out on R-77 is a Senate-only provision. That is linked, that's technical language allowing to transfer the money for the Gold Star plate.
Kate?
On the House side, on R-77 is Section 8, also from the Severson House File 1880 bill, along with Section 3 and Section 16. This section directs that the dismissal provisions of local government law shall also apply to state civil service for veterans. Those, just to remind you, those current provisions are something along the lines that a veteran may not be removed from a government position except for just cause after a hearing in which the veteran may be represented by counsel and which the veteran may appeal, and so on. The language of Section 8 would provide veterans with a irrevocable option of either using that hearing process or the hearing process provided by their collective bargain agreement. Section 9 is a Hosh bill, House File 2238. It amends the removal provisions of veteran preference law and the rest of veterans preference law, actually, by removing the exclusion for teachers. So in other words, the veterans preference law would henceforth apply to teachers as well.
Now, for some reason, and no one really knows why, back in the 40s they excluded teachers from this. I don't know why. So Representative Hosh says teachers should get a preference for interview, not for hiring, if you're a veteran. So all it does is get them into the interview process. Research and others couldn't really remember or discover why we had excluded them back in the World War II era. So I think it's a good thing to put back in. It'll just get them into an interview in a school system if they're a veteran.
Yes, and of course that applies to public school teachers only.
Right.
But it would probably apply at the university level as well.
Yep.
Mr. Chairman, I'll point out that House language that you're referring to there, Section 9, does apply to a dismissal hearing. It's not simply the interview process. Then on the bottom of R-79, on the Senate side, you see Section 5 there. That's extending the expiration date for the Veterans Higher Education Campus Assistance Program. It will either expire at the end of the first fiscal year, where there are fewer than 4,000 veterans, but it cannot expire any later than 2013. The current law would require the 2011 expiration.
I'll give you the explanation. We do support that program in the House. However, it added tails. If we do that, then we have to fund it in the second biennium. It is a tail issue. And so since it doesn't expire until we come back 2 years from now, we thought it best to do that expiration in 2 years so we didn't have to account for those tails in our budget. Because if it doesn't sunset, you got to fund it out into your second biennium tail. And at this point, the fiscal folks see a sunset, and that means we're not funding. And so it became a tails problem, not an issue of whether we support the program or not. And we thought it best to come back 2 years from now when we're putting our budgets together, then extend the sunset or remove it and fund into the future. So that was our rationale, and we can discuss that further. We do support that program. I'll make that very clear.
Mr. Chair, we need to do a little bit of work.
Well, we'll do some homework on some of these issues, particularly the fiscal ones offline, and
yep.
Make sure we come back, because we both support that program. I don't think we can expand it now, but there is still a need at this point, and we would support doing that. But again, it just simply became a tails issue, and our finance folks and Ways and Means folks told us we had to fund it then. So, all right.
Then, Mr. Chairman, there's another standalone provision beginning, you'll see the language on the top of R-80 on the Senate side. That's the statutory appropriation for the GI Bill. And I will point out the new language at the end of that section does provide a $6 million cap on the amount of the open appropriation beginning in July 1st, 2013.
Okay.
Yes, sir. Mr. Chairman,
we're almost done. We know we have session at 11, members.
Mr. Chairman, and members, on R-80 on the House side, Section 10 was a junkie amendment, providing some comfort language, legitimizing long-standing practice. It basically authorizes the Commissioner of Veterans Affairs to apply for and accept federal funding. And of course, that's been done with the veterans' homes for a very long time. Section 11 comes from a junkie bill, House File 627. It directs that veterans' homes must encourage residents to use Medicare Part D for their pharmaceuticals.
And again, Senator Ropes, we changed the language a little bit from, this was a Berglund bill, and she sent it over to me. And basically, I added the language in mind that they could utilize Medicaid Part D, and certainly we want to do that if it brings money into our homes, but it should not be less than the benefit they get from their veterans' benefits. So we want an either-or there. We don't want it to just be one or the other, and then we actually lose money if one's less. So I modified it a bit, and I think that works.
Section 12 comes from House File 47, a junkie bill, directing the Commissioner of Veterans Affairs to establish a veterans mental health facility in Kandi, Ojai County. It would be a 90-bed facility. The Commissioner is directed to apply for federal funding for the facility, and Section 15 would target the opening date for that facility to be July 1st, 2013.
Again, this is a bill that we've had in bonding and we've talked about in the past few years. This is done similar to Fergus Falls with no state bonding dollars. That's why it's in here. It's a local bond. Similar way we built the Ag Department here. If you remember, the Port Authority did the bonds, not the state, so it didn't go against our bonding authority. And this is done similarly with local money, modeled after the way Fergus Falls was built. Senator Vickerman, I think you were around then at that point.
Mr. Chairman, we need to do a little more study of that issue.
Well, we'll talk about it, but I'm extremely...
Because the funding.
Right.
You know, the funding. You can build it. I can build anything, but I got to have some money to operate it.
Well, and again, that's where Senator Berglund and I are going to have a discussion
that's
because it's in hers right now. I know you support it, but you don't have the funding for it.
I don't have the authority.
But we will. That'll be part of our discussions with leadership and Senator Berglund. And again, we fund about 57% of the operations of the homes, and that's certainly a commitment. Although the way this is structured, knowing the way the feds work and when the home will be built, it's probably the third biennium out before the funding's there, so it doesn't hit our tails yet, but it will in the future.
Yeah. Mr. Chair, I know you maybe don't agree with this, but there is a report that's supposed to be coming and decide if we need, where we need, if we need any.
Oh, that was my language. I put that in my...
I know that, but we're waiting for that.
And again, and we can get into this more.
No, I don't want to.
No.
Special.
I mean, this is a mental health facility, not a standard home, and we can talk about that later. But anyway, Mr. Cleary,
yes,
you got to get the session.
Mr. Chairman, on R81, Section 13 on the House side is from House File 980, a leader bill. Dealing with the police officer reciprocity exam, it broadens the eligibility criteria for veterans to better recognize their military police service experience and alternative training. Section 14.
Was that the Senate bill?
Mr. Chairman, that's actually on general orders in the Senate, Senate File 908. I think there's a House companion that's also on the floor of the House.
And again, what you're seeing here, members, is we pulled those bills off the general register and put them in here, hoping to move them quicker than what they might do on the general register standalone.
On the last couple of lines there on page R81, members, we have Section 14. It extends the deadline for the County Veteran Service Officer Working Group. It extends it by 1 year to June 30th, 2010.
And Senator Ropes, we have had some questions from folks on that. I know that was your provision, and we were happy to put it in committee. But that may take some explanation if people are wondering why. We don't have to do it now, but when we get to the adoption of that.
Section 15 on the R82 members is part of that Kandi, Ojai Mental Health Facility Bill, House File 47, that prohibits the commissioner from beginning operations or extending state money for operations until July 1, 2013, next biennium. Section 16 goes along with Section 3 and 8, House File 1880, the Severson Bill dealing with veterans' preference. And this directs the Commissioner of Finance to collect certain agency-level data on state hiring, and the intention is to show exactly where the falloff is occurring in that hiring process, and these data items were pretty carefully crafted to try to show that and to show it by agency, and that would be an annual data collection and report going forward. Section 17 comes from Representative Towles, House File 1295, deals with allied forces that aided the U.S. military in the Vietnam War. And it directs the commissioner to contact any and all federal agencies to try to find a list of the identities of those allied soldiers who assisted us. Now, most of the discussion dealt with among soldiers, but the way the language is written, it would also apply to Vietnamese soldiers, and I believe I'd have to look at this again. Yeah, I believe.
And members, again, in the note of information, may be good. We had some discussions, I don't know if you did in your committees, on and Mary, Representative Tremba's committee, on Powell's bill actually said you should give the allied veterans the same benefits in the state as we give our other veterans. They fought side by side and saved many lives in Vietnam with our guys, and I don't think that's disputed. But it did become somewhat contentious, wondering how many numbers of people there would be. Representative Powell thinks there's probably less than 100, and it'd be insignificant, but to get that information, and I know you were in Vietnam, Senator Dill and others that were over there, we're asking them to try and collect those numbers so next year or the next budget cycle we can have an idea on what we're talking about, that it's not hundreds of thousands, but it's maybe 100 people or 50 people that may qualify. And certainly I don't think there's argument that those folks saved a lot of lives and took a lot of risk over in Vietnam on behalf of our folks that were over there, and that's recognized, but we want to make sure we have good information. So that's what we're doing there.
Well, on that point, Senator Dill. Mr. Chairman, I'm sure it's much more than 100 if in the state of Minnesota. On Saturday, there was a rally out in front of the Capitol that I spoke at to commemorate the 34th anniversary of the fall of Saigon, and to recognize those, it was put on by Vietnamese, it was to recognize those soldiers that had died and civilians that had died and those that had survived, and there was quite a few people there. And I don't know how many thousands of Hmong and Vietnamese refugees we have in this country, but it's or in this state, but it's got to be way over 100. Probably, I would say, I don't know, I wouldn't want to guess right now, but it's got to be many fold more than
right.
that.
But it's not just for the refugees. I mean, Representative Powell is a refugee, but he wasn't an allied soldier, foot soldier, and that's what we're trying to discover. And basically, as you know, they're CIA lists, and there's other things that kept track of these folks who worked with us that we're trying to figure out if there's a way to access them. Senator Dillon.
Well, Mr. Chair, members, I understand that there's a lot of refugees here that were not soldiers in Vietnam. Vietnamese are Hmong soldiers, they're Laotian soldiers, but there are a lot of them that were also, some of whom I personally sponsored and personally know. And my guess is it's many fold more than 100.
And we'll look for your guidance on that, Senator Dill, because I know you're intimately involved with that issue. So, thank you.
Mr. Chairman, if it would help, I just want to remind the members once again that the discussion focused on Hmong soldiers, and perhaps that's where that estimate came from. When you include the Vietnamese, it would probably be a good deal more.
Okay.
Turning to military affairs policy, R85 is the only...
If I can just jump in real quick here, there's a provision at the bottom on the House side, Section 18, at the bottom of R83, that basically directs the Department of Veterans Affairs not to use funds appropriated to pay for governor's office debt. I did want to point out, for whatever it's worth, that Senate File 2082, which is the state government omnibus bill, does something very similar.
Okay.
It basically increases the appropriation of the governor's office and then directs the Commissioner of Finance to reduce appropriations to other agencies that are supplying funds through interagency agreements. So that would also affect the Department of Ag.
Yep. All right. Very good. Thank you.
Yeah. Thank you, Mr. Stoddard. Turning to military affairs, the House has only one provision. It's on page R85, Section 3. It's from the Rukavina 2118, House File 2118 suicide bill. It directs the Adjutant General to establish a program for post-deployment health and wellness assessments for National Guard members who are returning from the war. And those assessments would have to be held between 6 months and 1 year after deployment. And the Commissioner, the Adjutant General may include other agencies to actually do that, federal and state agencies.
And members, this came from Representative Rukavina, who had one of his folks drive into an abandoned ore pit and commit suicide, and he's working with their parents, and we understand it's a huge issue, so we've worked with Military Affairs and Department of Veterans Affairs and others, and they've agreed to do more screenings of their veterans within the armories, not just as they come back, but also at periodic rates to see if we can't grab some of these folks when they're getting into trouble and save some lives. So I think it's a good provision, and we have worked it out with Veterans Affairs and Military Affairs, just so you know the background. Good. All right. That's the end of the spreadsheet. So, again, members, happy to entertain any questions for those that just came in late and didn't hear the opening discussion. Again, reminder, we have a very unique opportunity here. If we can put this bill together in the next 2 weeks and agree on targets amongst ourselves and the department, we don't have to deal with our leadership. That's our assignment. So if we can come to reasonable targets, and we're going to work online here in public, and we're also going to work offline. Mm-hmm. We want people that can make decisions in the room from all the departments, and that's our assignment. Senator Vickerman and I will figure out when the next meetings are. Watch your emails, whether it's tomorrow morning or tomorrow afternoon or Friday or Monday. We are not sure yet, but we'll talk about that. Senator Vickerman. Oh, yeah. All the stuff you want to save, put it in your folders, or it ends up in the wastebasket, and you'll have to start over. With that, we are adjourned.